Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday. It is the 13th of October. We come to you an hour earlier than normal, 7 minutes past 8 o'clock. We're here because at 9 o'clock, NPR will continue their coverage of the hearings for Amy Coney Barrett to take a seat on the Supreme Court. Day one yesterday was opening statements, and today the questioning will begin, and it'll be a long day, we are told. So we will begin our coverage at 9 o'clock, and we moved up the roundtable to 8 o'clock so we could try to get our hands and our ideas, our brains around some of the stories that are making news. So good morning, everyone. We welcome, as we always do, your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
And good morning, sir, to you. I am fine. I did my walk in the rain. It was nice.
It's pouring here. Were you not as...
Now it's pouring here in Great Barrington now, but it wasn't then. It was sort of just dribbling a little bit and drizzling a little bit.
Yes.
And what else is there to say except I watched some of those hearings yesterday, and I think what I'm seeing is just a disgrace. You are, of course, Catholic, and Joe Biden is Catholic.
Yes.
And Donald Trump is not Catholic. and they're trying to make out that the Democratic Party, with a devout, by the way, Catholic at its head, is somehow anti-Catholic. Good old lying.
It's
a lying, lying, lying liar.
It's very strange. And I cocked my head many a time yesterday trying to figure it all out. Well, we'll talk about it. We also welcome Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick, is with us. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Joe.
Very nice to have you here. How are things up in the homeland?
You know, they're crummy. I'm waiting until after roundtable to go out for my run, hoping the rain will let up. But wish me luck on that one.
I will indeed. Former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is in the house. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. And the Empire Report's J.P. Miller on with us once again. Good morning, J.P. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Joe?
I'm well. Thank you very much. Really nice to have you all here. Thank you very much for being with us, for coming in an hour early as we try to, as I said, try to figure out what's going on in the world. So we begin with Barrett hearing day one. Two parties offering dueling views of Amy Coney Barrett as the confirmation fight begins. Yesterday was just the opening statements, and these are confirmation hearings, so they're often contentious, but this one is also being held during an election. And as people are actually going to the polls, Democrats portrayed Judge Amy Coney Barrett as a threat to Americans' health care coverage. Republicans charged anti-Catholic bias. So, two very divergent arguments on display on Monday in the Supreme Court fight and a marathon day of opening statements. Democrats assailed Judge Barrett as a conservative ideologue who would overturn the Affordable Care Act and abortion rights, and whose nomination amounted to an illegitimate power grab by a president in the last days before the election. Republicans steered clear of addressing Judge Barrett's anticipated effect on the court, instead promoting her sterling qualifications and accusing Democrats of unjustly attacking her because of her Catholic faith, despite the fact that they made no mention of it on Monday. So that is where we are. Alan, you started off. I'll let you continue, and then we'll go to the rest of the group.
Well, there isn't that much more to say than what I just said. It's a study in hypocrisy to accuse a party which has a devout Catholic as its head, of being anti-Catholic. While, you know, we have a guy who, a president, who talks about the demeaning of women and all the rest of it, which is anything but part of the Catholic faith. And in the meantime, what they're afraid of is that the House of Representatives, when it turned blue, you'll remember, was based on people being afraid of losing their health care. And now, of course, that's exactly what I think is going to happen. The Democrats are very wise. They're going back to that same playbook, and they're saying they want to get rid of Obamacare, and they're going to do it. And here's what it's going to cost the American people and all those people. And they had signs which had people's faces and names on them who were going to lose their health care and what it would mean to them. So so that's the duel. The duel is name-calling, unjustified name-calling by the Republicans, as opposed to, you know, just going back to the idea that they're going to take your health care away from you, Americans. You better get out there and vote.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, you know, Judge Barrett was stressing that Americans deserve an independent Supreme Court. But, you know, I don't know what that really means. In a better world, you would want someone like her with her qualifications to be articulate and to, you know, thoughtfully tell the argue the conservative case on the court. But you'd also want thoughtful moderates and thoughtful liberals and a chief judge who could kind of bring the balance together and work out a consensus. But you have other judges like Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito who do nothing more than just sit there, and they're guaranteed right-wing votes on nearly every issue. So it makes it a very bad time to get someone like Barrett to the court right now. And I just worry that doing it will pour gasoline all over the political divisions that are already tearing the country apart. It's really, I agree with Kamala Harris. You know, she said during the hearing, remotely, safely, that they should drop the hearings and they should convene, the Senate should convene and approve an economic stimulus package. Millions of Americans are unemployed. You have businesses going out of business. I mean, just today, you know, we read of another New York City iconic restaurant or hotel shutting down permanently, and this is happening all across America. Isn't really that a lot more urgent than these hearings that are risky the way they're holding them?
Right. Judy Patrick.
You know, I saw yesterday as not so much a hearing about confirming a Supreme Court justice. I think that's a done deal. That's for Democrats, that's a losing battle. Seems to be like more a proxy for the federal election, for president, for control of the Senate, with the Democrats trying to make the case that they're the party that's going to protect health care, and the Republicans, who are very unpopular with women, trying to convey the message that they are for female empowerment, because they've got this, you know, woman with a large family and a really great work-life balance and very pro-mother. You know, I wish I will never hear again how many children she has, because I went back into when they confirmed the hearings for Antonin Scalia, who had 9 children. They didn't talk nearly as much about how many kids he had and how great it was he was able to raise these children. I think it's sexist in a way to focus on the fact that she's got 7 children. It's a thing that I might get some blowback for, but I think it's actually sexist.
Well, and they went on and on and on about the kids. It was rather monotonous in it. And to your point, they're trying to say, hey, look, this woman could do it. She could be at the top. One of the top judges in the country, and also have these children, and not only have children, but also adopt children, which isn't that the right thing to do when there are so many people in this world who want kids who can't have them. JP Miller.
The most impressive thing that I heard about her children is that she had a son named JP, which I thought showed a lot of good judgment.
And that's only because they ran out of names.
Right. We have heard a lot about her children, which I was impressed to see them all sitting there in the gallery. And one thing people have focused a lot on her adopted children, but people have not focused so much on the fact that she has a child with Down syndrome, which I was really impressed to hear. And that, I believe, son of hers was unfortunately unable to be there. But I did think that humanized her and impressed me. And as a very, I really look forward to these Senate Senate confirmation hearings for Supreme Court justices. And I'm listening to the opening statements by Lindsey Graham and the senator from California, Senator Feinstein. And then they go to Grassley and Leahy. And I go, okay, well, maybe they're going to let the ranking members also make an opening statement. And I didn't realize that yesterday was really not a hearing. It was just each senator on the committee got to filibuster for 15 or 20 minutes. And then we heard an opening statement from Coney Barrett, where she didn't really say anything. So yesterday, to me, was kind of, I would say, a missed opportunity for America. It was just kind of, there was no exchange between the senators and the nominee, which I was disappointed in.
Which we are expected to get today in some way, shape, or form. Through the questioning, a half hour, each senator gets a half hour, which is a lot, it seems to me. But we'll see what happens. Again, coverage beginning at 9 o'clock. The points that are being made, I mean, even Lindsey Graham pretty much summed it up in the first two or three minutes of his opening statement that says, we're going to do this. The Republicans, we have the votes. We're going to do this. The Democrats are going to vote no. The Republicans are going to vote yes, and this is going to happen. So in that way, it's a bit anticlimactic, isn't it, Alan?
And that may, Joe, be one of the reasons why his opponent in this election, which is very close, by the way, is collecting more money than anybody has ever seen before. People are infuriated with his behavior.
Yeah, and of course, for Lindsey Graham, the big, and it was brought up a few times yesterday, that he said, look, we would never do this again. We would never bring up during an election year, so close to an election, I can tell you, take it to the bank, play my words back to me. And then of course they did it. So, go ahead.
I have a question. It's probably inappropriate, and I apologize in advance for it. But I believe everybody on the panel except me is Catholic. Am I right about that?
No, I am not Catholic.
Oh, you're not. Okay.
I am not.
Sorry about that. I in making my calculation, I came to you and I didn't know. But I'd love to know from the Catholics on the panel, how they were struck by the assumption that Catholics would be opposed to the Democrats because they were anti-Catholic. The Democrats were allegedly anti-Catholic. I'm fascinated by that. Anybody got anything to say?
Well, studies after studies show that American Catholics, Catholics around the world, Catholics in Europe, etc., have very different views and weigh different aspects of the way they judge the teaching of Christ. I mean, some Catholics really embrace the social justice message and they use that to motivate them. Others somehow equate Catholicism with having a right to own a gun and to ban abortions and for everybody in society, not just make it a sin for Catholics. And it's spreads all across the spectrum. I remember one time, Alan, you like this, I was at some event and Mario Cuomo was speaking back in the early 80s. And it was, I think, during the 84 election. So I was asking him, what about the Catholic vote? He said, there isn't a Catholic vote. And I think he was right then. And I think it's more true now. I mean, Catholics are assimilated into American society. Some are very conservative. Some are very liberal. And probably most of them are somewhere in between. And to use a broad brush, I think it belittles Catholics. And it shows how inept some of these Republicans are by trying to put us all in one box.
The other thing too I would add, Mike, is that of course abortion is so linked to this issue. So if you're saying Catholic, it's what your view is on abortion. Most of there have been many polls over the years that have said that I think one was from Pew did a poll a number of years ago. I want to say like 3 years ago that most people if you are a practicing Catholic defined as somebody who goes to church, I think twice a month, that only 33% of those people were considered to be pro-choice, would consider themselves to be pro-choice. Most people say that it is that Catholics consider abortion to be morally acceptable. So I think 64% or something like that. So, I mean, those numbers would certainly indicate exactly what Mike's saying. Also, that it's a wide swath, and it also seems to be a strange thing. I mean, Alan, you know this all too well of Father Cuomo of running for president and on his view on abortion and you know of having the Cardinal of New York not even want to give him communion. That is very much, you know, that's certainly a part of the church, but there are many of us who go to communion every week and not, you know, hold the same views as former Governor Cuomo.
You know, it's interesting because he lost that fourth term. He was elected three incredible times, but he lost that fourth term. It was a rough year for Democrats all over the country, 94, I guess. Nevertheless, apparently the thing that pollsters and others are showing really hurt him was his views on the death penalty.
Right.
And the church certainly has a strong view on that, which is, you know, the Pope and all others are against it. So go figure.
You know, what I think the Republicans are trying to do in these hearings when they raise the issue of Amy Coney Barrett's faith is they're trying to paint the Democrats as anti-religion altogether because the evangelical vote is so important to the Republicans. I don't think it's so much a a Catholic issue, although that does tie into abortion, but evangelicals as well tend to skew into the anti-abortion category. I think they just want to paint Democrats as against religion altogether.
JP, are you upset that... Go ahead. Yep.
I agree with my fellow altar boys, Mahoney and Spain, on everything they said about the diverse views within the Catholic Church. But I also think that Republicans are doing this in a little bit in response to the press reports about Amy Coney Barrett being a member of a group within the Catholic Church where they call themselves handmaids. And anticipated questioning by senators about involvement in that. I don't know whether Democratic senators will ask her about her involvement in that group, what their beliefs were, what they did, or whether they will view that as out of bounds and they won't ask her about it. But I think that those press reports are part of what they were foreshadowing.
We got some, I want to go to the letters here and just start them. We got this one from Naomi, who says, as I watched another Republican contrived nomination and hearing, I realized that Amy Barrett is teaching her four daughters who sat like obedient stones in their 50s attire that they do not have the right to be independent thinking females. She is also instructing her daughters that they are subservient to all men, especially those men who control their lives, their thoughts, and their actions, just as she was instructed as a young child and still believes today. With the nomination of Amy Barrett, we will now have a person who will disregard the separation of church and state and bring some tricks, quote unquote, to the Supreme Court, a court that is already corrupted with two sexual predators and one illegally seated judge. Where is Pelosi with her bow and quivers, and where is Schumer? Pretty harsh. I don't know. Go ahead,
harsh,
Mike.
Harsh is right. I, with all due respects, Naomi, I think that was a little bit harsh. Just having your children dressed and behaving behind you is like a negative. certainly her family is
it's an impossibility, I think, but it isn't.
Yeah. But it's certainly, I mean, you know, that's the wrong road to go down. She certainly has an impressive family. They have been very giving to their children, and it's exemplary. It may not be the way everybody wants to do it, but you can't attack that. I think that's what exactly was intended, that the Democrats would react like that letter writer, and people would, and there'd be a backlash to that, because I don't think you can judge a person so harshly by the fact that they have a lot of children and they're well behaved. I mean, gee, I kind of wish I had well behaved children when I was raising mine, but they weren't always well behaved.
Yeah, you know, you make a point. When Giuliani, you may remember the most famous thing, his kid is all grown up now, but the kid misbehaved when Giuliani was being sworn in or giving a speech.
Yeah.
And that became a huge story about what a miserable
little Andrew,
little kid he
yes.
was.
Yeah. Yeah. he works for ABC now, I think. Isn't he?
I so he's part wrong. Of the news.
Also had a stint, in the Trump White House.
That's right. He did. Okay. Let's see. Let's go to this letter. Who says, spot on, Judy, pointing out the sexism behind the line of thought there. It's also worth noting the difference between raising children in a family with resources and one without. Thanks for being on early, y'all, says Samantha. Thank you, Samantha. We go to this letter from Denise. Hello, panel. Thank you for your excellent commentary. I'd like to see the Democratic senators confront Mitch McConnell and his idea that this nomination is appropriate because the president and Senate are the same party. In a government that prides itself on a balance of power, this is a bogus argument. The best time to choose a judge would be, in fact, when the president and Senate are of opposite parties, ensuring a pick that is acceptable to both sides. Why hasn't this come up? That struck me as the most convenient excuse they could come up with, right?
Well, I think it has come up, but from a strange place. Basically, the defense of doing it now comes from the Lindsey Grahams and the other guys who are saying it's perfectly okay for us to do it now because we have the Senate and the president. Am I wrong about that?
That no. is their argument. Yeah, but yeah. That's been Lindsey Graham's argument. But essentially, it's like Joe mm-hmm. said earlier, it's we got the votes. We can do it. The Democrats would do it if they had the votes, period.
No question.
Na, 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 na. We go to Robert, who says Republican senators now emulate the behavior of their leader, who is contemptuous of the powerless and poor. Republicans now represent corporate America. They want no help from anyone but themselves. The laws they seek to undo or enact will lead to enriching the top 1% again. We desperately need a change. Let's pause there. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with the letters. We'll continue with the conversation. Our wonderful panel is here this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Judy Patrick, J.P. Miller. We're up till 9 o'clock when NPR takes over for coverage of the Amy Coney Barrett hearings. All of that and more after this short break. Minutes past 8 o'clock. Good morning. Welcome to this Tuesday morning. It's the 13th of October, and it's the Roundtable panel. Special edition going a bit early this morning, and we welcome our panel, Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, J.P. Miller, and Mike Spain. All right, let's go to a couple of letters, and then we'll move on to some other subjects here as we fill out this half hour. Good morning, esteemed panel. Why did Amy Coney Barrett bring her kids to a job interview? Well, it's a little more than a job interview.
Yeah, everybody. Everybody's done that too.
Yeah, sure. I think it's one of those things you bring your family to. Who funds the Federalist Society? Who will benefit from not a pro-life justice, but another expected conservative opinion on the court? Dark money, more money. That from Kevin.
Well, it's a good letter because I believe Trump has made it clear that his entire list came from the Federalist Society. Am I wrong about that? I think that he said that early on, that certainly was
the case. Yes,
he was boasting it. But doesn't the remaining Koch brother? Isn't he a big benefactor of this? I thought I had read that. I could be wrong.
Right, the Koch brother, who's against federal or who wants to degrade the federal government's ability to regulate almost everything from the environment to taxation to health policy. They've poured millions into it over the last 25 years. And if you've been paying attention on television, there have been millions and millions of dollars spent on the on this campaign to get Amy Coney Barrett onto the Supreme Court.
I want to read this letter from Bob, which I admit I don't quite understand. So please, panel, help me out. Have the Democrats considered confirming Amy Coney Barrett, then pushing her left?
Absurd. I mean, it's a good letter, and I get it, but it's absurd because they didn't pick her because she had the potential for going left.
Right.
On the contrary, they picked her. So it's an interesting letter.
Sherry's.
I think it's an interesting letter too, in that I thought that the Democratic senators were talking more about the Affordable Care Act rather than Roe v. Wade. I was expecting a lot of Roe v. Wade talk. It was much more weighted to the Affordable Care Act. They had photographs of people who have pre-existing conditions that have been bankrupted by America's healthcare system, and I can't imagine that the judge Coney Barrett sitting there listening to all those stories. I'm not saying that she's necessarily going to vote another way, but I think that listening for that long to those stories has to have some effect on a judge and has to have them think twice about whatever. You know, I believe there's a judgment coming up in just a couple weeks in front of the Supreme Court that she may have to preside over.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to jump on what JP said. I agree. I think that she can be influenced. You know, as Supreme Court judges go, she's relatively young, and she is a very thoughtful academic, and she's certainly a very bright and intelligent woman. It isn't like she won't possibly be persuaded by solid legal arguments. Like I said before, Alito and Thomas, just count their votes now because that's what they're going to vote. But she's an unknown. She could moderate. I mean, Thomas, the chief judge, the chief judge.
Roberts,
yes. Thank you. John Roberts has moderated quite a bit. And you know,
let's remember that Roberts was appointed not by this president, but by the Bushies, maybe she will change. But she's been on the courts. We have a pretty good idea of her record already. And to those people who think that she has the potential for changing, I say put your money on the table.
Roberts was also the choice of the Federalist Society at the time, and everybody, you know, that there were certainly a lot of Democratic senators at the time made the case that this is going to be a reliable right-wing conservative justice, and I believe that over the last couple of years, he's been the deciding vote on a number of 5-4 decisions where he sides with the progressives on the court over the conservatives.
But let's make it clear, he is not a progressive. You know, he's a conservative and he votes conservatively. He just didn't want to wreck the court. I mean, I think that's the big difference.
On the biggest decisions. Yeah. He's a conservative except on the biggest decisions where he sides with the progressives.
Well, depends what you mean. I don't agree with that, but maybe we could take an hour to discuss it.
Not today.
Come back tomorrow, JP. All right. Diane says, I remember when John F. Kennedy was running for president, Republicans said he would follow the Pope's rules instead of our laws. I don't think Democrats care really what her religious life is like. My objection to her is the way the Republicans have been steamrolling her onto the bench. We go to Mary, whose subject line in her email is simply, ah! How many Americans are suffering and dying while our government isn't addressing the pandemic because our government is too busy wasting our time, risking COVID infection in the Senate, and spending God knows how much taxpayer dollars on an unnecessary hearing with a foregone conclusion? They should vote this morning, get back to their real jobs of protecting the public.
There is something I was going to mention too. Yesterday, Mike Lee was there.
Yes.
He was speaking without a mask.
Without a mask.
That was 11 days ago that he was tested positive. And you know, Ted Cruz, who I've never been a big fan of Ted Cruz, but he was at the same party that Mike Lee was at, after which Lee started feeling sick and tested positive. And Cruz tested negative, but he went into quarantine. And he came on a video screen so that he could be safe. And, you know, I mean, and then you had two 87-year-olds, you know, Dianne Feinstein and Chuck Grassley in the room, and they're not getting tested. I mean, it's just a risky thing. There were more than 70 people in the room, which violated the District of Columbia's rules. Of course, the Senate's exempt from those. But, I mean, it was just hypocrisy all the way around.
It really was. And yeah, when Lee came on without a mask, that was because Lindsey Graham announced him initially, like, welcome back, and made a point to say that he had tested negative and was back and had been cleared by his doctors. Remember when that used to mean something?
Reminding me, of course, about the disgrace of Donald Trump's doctor, who seems to be a mouthpiece and reading what he's supposed to do, this nonsense about tested negative twice in a row. When? In December? I mean, when was that done? They will not tell you the relevant information, and that's more Trumpism if there ever was.
And to my ahead.
And it's part of the Republican strategy. The Republicans controlled that hearing room, and they want to get the message out. This is not a big issue. We don't have to take all these extra precautions. It keys into the president's campaign strategy. This is just subliminally, if anything, getting the message across that the president is winning the war against this virus. Meanwhile, we've got cases surging in the Midwest at an incredible rate.
Yep. We're seeing the rate up over 14 days, 19%. We've had some of our highest numbers since July, all over the country. The hot spots, there are very few states that don't have any clusters, and this is a really a very concerning time, especially considering we're going into fall. We are in fall. And this is what everyone had worried about. When you have Dr. Fauci saying that he has canceled his plans for his family Thanksgiving dinner, I think that gives you some clue as to what we're up against in the days and weeks to come.
And Trump is attacking Fauci.
And no
once
windows
again.
In that room.
I'm sorry. No windows in Fauci's living room. No, in the hearing room. Yes.
No windows, yeah. And some of them were wearing masks, and some of them weren't, and at different times. And I agree. I think that viewers that were watching that were just. I was certainly confounded at how some were wearing masks. Sometimes some weren't. They're all. Most of them are old. But, you know, you put a camera in front of a United States senator, they want to be there. They want their face on TV. They're willing to risk their life for it.
Interesting, because as soon as, you know, I was sitting here alone watching it, and when they came on, when Lee came on without his mask, I put mine on.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't
think
it comes over the TV waves.
You never know.
And, you know, the Republicans need the votes of senior citizens and and women, and they see that, and they lose their trust in the government and Republicans. It's so counterproductive to their efforts to get reelected. It confounds me. Maybe there's some sort of internal polling that makes this make sense, but it doesn't make sense from where I'm sitting.
No, it's hard to it is hard to figure out, and we'll see obviously over the next few weeks of what the of how it all shakes out politically.
3 weeks, right? 3 weeks from today.
3 weeks from today, right?
I guess I'm sure you're going to mention, and it's just worthy of mention, the terror in California as the Republicans put out their own boxes and say, okay, if you vote, you put it in a Republican box, we'll take care of you. You know, I mean, that's unbelievable. That is unbelievable.
It really is. It really is. I want to get, we have about 15 minutes. So I'm going to take a break. And when I come back, I want to talk about debate alternatives to the now canceled October 15th debate, which could be in lieu of that debate, could be town halls by each candidate on different television networks. We'll talk about that. We'll read some more letters and we'll wrap up this morning when we come back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Judy Patrick, and J.P. Miller. It is, you know, just before we were going to the break, Alan was mentioning the boxes, the ballot boxes in California that have been put up by the state's Republican Party. And what's interesting to me about that story is they don't know how many there are. They put up, I think, what, Alan, in three counties. And so the election officials in the state are saying you have to take them down because they're not official. And the Republicans say we're not going to. And now they don't know, the state officials have no idea how many there are.
It's amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah. And when
you know, and what happens to them? Do the Republicans collect them and sort them all out? I mean, that's unbelievable.
It's and by the way, I don't know. I realize that this is in the eye of the beholder, but looking at them in just some of the pictures that I've seen and in the coverage last night that I was watching, they don't look very official. I don't know if I'd put my ballot in one. I mean, some of them just look like mail slots. But
yeah, we should also note that overnight, the U.S. Federal Appeals Court upheld Texas Governor Abbott's order to shut down the dozens of mail ballot drop-off sites that he called for at one point. A court last week reversed it. Now a new decision says, yep, he can take all but one of those drop-off boxes out of circulation, which will make it harder for people to drop off boxes ahead of time.
How did we screw this up so royally?
Well, it's amazing. That's just really amazing. You know, America has the right to vote, but only the way we say it, they have the right to vote. It's just so terrible.
John writes us, his subject line is sarcasm alert. I'm sure that the Honorable Amy Coney Barrett is born to us on a wave of impressive judiciary credentials. It's a shame that the Republican senators have such little faith in her credentials that they won't wait and see if those credentials are truly good enough to propel her through to the appointment. That from John. We go to Sherry, who said, I felt that Graham's opening remarks were drawing a line, daring a Democrat to show courage and vote for this nomination. Another John, this one of Hudson, says even if the Supreme Court rules that the Affordable Care Act is unconstitutional, it's not the end of the world. After the election, Democrats will control the White House and both houses of Congress. Then a health care bill that complied with the court's ruling could be enacted immediately. Well, jury's still out on that.
And what about the Supreme Court?
Right.
I mean, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to say, "Oh, we don't like this or this or this." Come on.
All right. So to the issue of the debates, you will recall that the debate commission originally came out and said we are going to do virtual debates. The president of the United States said he doesn't want to do virtual debates because he may get cut off. So then the commission said, okay, we're going to cancel the debate. And they canceled the debate that was supposed to take place on Thursday. So now what we're seeing is that immediately upon cancellation, ABC News decided they were going to do a town hall style event with Joe Biden, much like they did with the president a few weeks ago. And they're going to do that with Joe Biden, and George Stephanopoulos is going to oversee that. Then NBC announced they are working on a town hall event with the president. Savannah Guthrie would moderate that town hall. The unfortunate part, at least for those of us that care about such things, is that it looks like they're going to run opposite one another, or they would under at least what is being worked on right now. The I believe the ABC one is going to run for 2 hours, and the NBC one would run for 2 hours as well, one from 8 to 10, the other one from 9 to 11. So I don't know. How does that work? JP, you're our resident debate. I don't want to use the word nerd. What is the word I want to use?
Guru, expert.
Yeah, go ahead.
It makes you wonder why they don't just get together and debate if they're both going to be doing live town halls with voters. I was very disappointed in the first debate. That was not a debate. It was a disgrace. I really enjoyed the second debate. That's what I think that debates should be like, people with opposing views respectfully having a, you know, an exchange of ideas. And I hope that I hope we get another debate before Biden and Trump. If they deprive me of debates, it's really disappointing because it is my favorite thing to watch on the planet. Right up there with Supreme Court confirmation hearing.
Well, I was just going to say, technically, as of this point, JP, hold out some hope because they still have one scheduled for a week from Thursday on October 22nd. And so far, that has not been canceled, and neither candidate has bowed out.
Well, the real question to me is whether the American people want more debates. I don't. I think Joe Biden did extraordinarily well in the first debate, and if he didn't, Donald Trump did extraordinarily badly in that first debate. And what do you want? Another replication? A do-over? I don't think Biden wants it, and certainly Trump must know he got slaughtered in that one, so he makes up excuses for not doing it. In the meantime, he's 10 points behind in the national polls. So whether that may change, of course. He's getting out there and he's doing his thing. But one wonders whether the debate issue really needs to be resolved. I'm relieved they're not going to have another one.
I think the most relieved human being on the face of the planet must be Steve Scully, who is supposed to moderate the second debate. How happy is he right now?
Well, you've got to know that the tweet the following day that President Trump is going to be trying to get the highest rating for his show rather than over Joe Biden. Unlike JP, debates are not my favorite thing to watch, particularly because they never really debate. Let's hope that the moderators of these discussions that are happening on Thursday are able to fact check the candidates and that we get some real questions and some real answers out of everybody. But again, the president's going to pull some sort of stunt so he gets a higher rating because essentially attention ratings is all he really cares about.
Not only is he the only one who cares about it, I've been watching CNN nonstop. And, you know, they keep putting on the president with his false claims, his lies, his bombast and all the rest. And very little Joe Biden, because Joe Biden doesn't do for their ratings what Trump's outrageousness does.
Right. The media is failing this election cycle just like they did in 2016.
So that's a great point. Let me ask the journalists here. which would be all of you, but there is on the front page of the New York Times, they said, we fact-checked what the president said at his rally. This is, again, it's the New York Times. Is it cynical to ask why bother at this point?
Why bother what?
Like, why bother fact-checking it? I mean,
the more that Trump screws up, the more that he lies, the more that people will pull away from him. I mean, I don't think there's any question that that's what's going on, and I'm sure that's what CNN is thinking and doing.
But my point is it by again saying, okay, here, but they're covering Trump. It's to your point, Alan, but they're not covering Biden. They're not doing this to Biden. Here's what Biden said at his rally. Here are all the things that he didn't say right. The front page is here are all the things that President Trump said, and here's what he said that's misleading and false.
But it's working for Biden. He's 10 points ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he might even be more ahead if they weren't the press wasn't amplifying Trump by repeating the falsehoods and correcting them. When you just ignore them, how many people were at the rally? Not many people were at the rally. They get amplified when CNN covers them way too much, so with MSNBC and definitely so with Fox, and then when the mainstream media, which I should point out. New York Times, The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, and other major news outlets are not accompanying him on these rallies anymore because it's not physically safe for their reporters. But I think we're way too much coverage to his theatrics and not enough coverage to a whole bunch of other issues that need covering at this point.
But I have to ask, what Judy, should the press be doing? What's the responsible thing to doing when the president makes an outrageous assertion, when he tells a bold lie that is so factually incorrect? Should they not expose that to the American public? I understand what you're saying. I mean, it just gives him more attention and lets him get more airtime. But should you ignore what the president says?
Right. That's one of the things, one of the traps we in the press fall into. If the president says it,
right,
it must be newsworthy. But he tends to repeat the same lies again and again and again.
Well, that's it.
And we tend to repeat. We're caught in this cycle of, oh, he said this again, and this is wrong again. So I think there needs to be some moderation of it. Certainly, it needs to be pointed out. But man, on the front page of the New York Times, seriously.
JP,
in that story, I think it says something like, and I'm not looking right at it now, but I recall it saying something like, and he broke into his usual stump speech where he made several assertions that had no factual basis or something like that, you know.
But then it is, that's correct, but it's President Trump made a litany of false or misleading claims, many of them familiar, about his Democratic opponent and the coronavirus pandemic on Monday, and here they are. And then it goes on in great detail as to listing each one of them. I don't know.
So here is a virally infected president. We know that. We don't know really whether it's over or not, but we know that. Who says to his audience, I want to go out there and give both the men and the women a kiss on the lips.
The pretty women. The pretty women.
Yeah, he said that. He said that. The idea that he means what he says is so important. He's a potential dictator. He's a potential, he's going to bring this country totalitarian. And he says it and he means it. And as far as I'm concerned, he needs to be covered so people will be afraid. And they are. I think there's evidence that a lot of people are coming over.
You know, that's red meat he threw out to the press, and they gobbled it up. I mean, it was such it was so obvious and it should have been played much better. It's all over the airways today, but there was an element. I mean, clearly, stupid, irresponsible thing to say. But he did it on purpose because he wants to own that news cycle, and kudos to him. He's got it once again.
A master of
did
it.
Did you say kudos to him?
Yes, kudos.
Yeah, he's won that cycle.
I don't give him any kudos. I think he's a dangerous, terrible demagogue. And we know you're right. That's, yeah. Go, Mike. Go,
we have 30 seconds.
I'm in the middle of the Michael Cohen book right now, and Michael Cohen states, he says, you know, what led to Trump's election? It was not any issue. It was not Hillary Clinton. It was not the Russians. It was the media's incessant coverage of Donald Trump's candidacy from start to end. And I also watched the rally last night. He was off his step. He was not with it. I think he thinks he knows he's losing.
Folks, we got to take a break, or we have to end this morning. We'll be back tomorrow. Here come the hearings.